Miller.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here. Thank you, Paul, for the invitation and for everyone coming along. It's my first time to read in Cork City, even though I have read in Bantry before, so it's a great start to the new year for me and for my family here too. A sort of thing, I've read a number of times at the West Cork Literary Festival. When I first got back into writing about 6 years ago, the Fish competition was one of the first ones that, that I entered and that I had some success in. I think Leanne O'Sullivan was the judge the first year I got shortlisted, which brought me luck, and I went on to be shortlisted and commended there a number of times. So I thought I'd start with the first poem that I had published in the Fish anthology. This poem is called Gap Year, and it's from the point of view of parents speculating that their first child has opened to be a girl. But it's really a poem of departure and change, and it's probably just as relevant today for people who are leaving for other reasons. Gap Year. Speculating on a future you know nothing about. Planning to vanish in China like a renegade. Turning up in Tokyo 3 weeks later, short of cash. Banging on about culture and repression and leaving the exam. Spending 3 days drinking coffee in an internet cafe. Harassing passing strangers for another cup. Googling yourself in case you've been reported missing. Finally wishing you hadn't sold your mobile in Beijing. We wave you off at the provincial airport, panic widening the gap, fluttering your embarrassment over us like a flag. Head down, you walk away from us, a missing ring, swirling 3 times before disappearing. And the main body of work that I'm going to read from this evening is from the collection that won the Patrick Kavanagh Award last autumn. And this collection is called the Bone House, and it's loosely based on research I was doing into the American poet Elizabeth Bishop, who visited Ireland as a young woman when she was just at the start of her career as a poet. And I thought I'd read this sequence of poems, because many of them were actually set in Cork. She landed at Cove in June 1937 and went on to spend about 15 days touring Ireland. When I started writing these poems initially, I did have some concerns about how valid it was to try and think myself into the head of another poet. But then I came across something Yvonne Boland had said. She's brought a book out called A Journey with Two Maps, which is a collection of essays about how she came into poetry. And she talks about the fact that no poet enters the life and work of another through words alone. Poets imagine each other. And in fact, then when I went on to read some of the poems at the Patrick Kavanagh Festival, Paul Durkin was there, and he reassured me that the people tried to do the same thing itself on many occasions. And in fact, he'd been to Brazil, where Elizabeth Bishop ended up living, and had also tried to imagine herself into her head. So with that, I'm going to continue with this project. So I'll read some of the poems that I had put in the Patrick Kavanagh collection. They're an attempt to reconstruct and reimagine Elizabeth Bishop's journey in 1937. And the first one is the beginning of the journey when she arrives at Cove on the 5th of June. And you probably all know that better than me, that the big liners couldn't come into Cove, so people had to wait and be brought in on a tender. So she spent a long time out on the deck waiting for the tenders to go in. It's right that you arrive in fog. Your thoughts before you like a noose to capture what for now you miss. So still imagining from books ordered before you left, the map others before you struggled to unfold. As fat trunks rumble from the hold and tenders bob like toy boats in the bath. Small children grumble, fall, then laugh, and drunks get drunker, swaying, singing cheerily of loneliness and sorrow and returning home. Is half of Brooklyn here? That familiar clutch of nuns with their one shy priest, head bowed. Each night, you think, do they, eyes just unwrap themselves like shrouds, shriveling to the floor, their bodies lost, even to themselves. You gaze into the mist and wait to see how present tense will merge with memory. It's late, but there are lights on in the house. The streets, still dipped in summer, coolly glimmer under fog. A fire lit in the rooms to air the sheets. Soup in a pot on the table, served with bread, cold meat. You want only to lie down flat until the earth stops spinning. You're still so young. Something so easy to forget, so stirring sometimes, but buttoned up with fun, undone with wishes. Protective of yourself, afraid to laugh though longing to, and nervous with the men, drunk on the boat. Their women, lousy, loose, their piled up cardboard cases, their wild offspring. Your friend's small car is swinging out over the dock and landing with a little sigh. Tomorrow Cork and Blarney together, where without knowing why, you refuse, like her, to bend back low, slide down and kiss the stone. Your face is dark and shadow, with the sun still shone. So, after they'd spent the first night in Cork, they headed off to kiss the choir, or not kiss the burning stone. So I thought I'd explore that one in a bit more detail. Again, you know better than me, I discovered in the old days that the stone was a fatal stone, and it was believed to have many different powers, not just the gift of God, but the most real one. Later on in the journey that Elizabeth Bishop was on with her friend, another friend joined them when they got to Europe, and there was quite a horrific car accident in which the third friend was very badly injured, and that sort of cast a shadow over the whole journey. So in this poem, I imagine the idea that they're reflecting, thinking, well, if we kiss the stone, we might have had a better journey ahead. The fatal stone. If I had kissed it just for luck, could we have avoided fate? We only laughed from fear. The damp, wet steps, the clammy walls that sucked my breath held no allure. Our hands had failed to reach each other under summer's stare with all the others waiting. Women older than us, those tired old men in plaid, that smell of boredom of their endless tourism, their searching for something to photograph, to show back home, a trophy of the sort. I tested words for water in my head, watching raindrops ring the slabs, recording mossy toes and sandals, their slap and slurping sound, harmless against the elements. We shivered at pearl button cardigans. My hair already standing up on end after pointless minutes of the murder earlier, in which her face was watching from the undressed bed. Churchill came here once, they told us, and look how he turned out. Summer here is chilled, like a grey day in a story before the prince arrives. These walls are silvered, and the fields tell nothing of the ancestors beneath. As yet, I cannot find you here. I turned away from the man with his hands on everyone's hips as he slid them over the gap and down to oblivion, his tongue between his teeth, their heads and necks disappearing, limp as strangled hens, the V of their bodies open to the sky. The next morning we left for Kerry, chasing the dawn. But when I led a detour to Kerry, one of the places we know very little about this journey. She was 15 days in Ireland and did such a grand tour. There isn't a whole lot of information about it, but we do know that they spent at least one night in Bettersfield Town in Dingle, which is question after that, I think she was just going to visit us in the mission and try and retrace her steps. So that poem is, this poem is about that, and it's called Threshold. Dark inside, after the bright day left behind on the pavement, I stumble at the step, thinking too much of your shoes before me. What time was it? What were you carrying? Were you tired? My eyes adjust to indoor light, the dust and sheen on bottles, the gleam of a wooden bar, long polished into handsomeness, the silence of the room, like liquid in the glass, molten. Three floral chairs at the window form a bouquet. All the wood is glowing, as if the heat of the summer has seeped in behind the heavy drapes and the deep flower carpeting, behind the creamy papered walls, with their bumps of history, their blisters of other papers, tapes, years, the odd dark photograph. The receptionist is kind, but nothing remains of those days in her register, and the old ones are long gone, vanished in armfuls, into fire or dust, or souped without glory into bags to be lost in an attic somewhere. The place is much the same, she tells me. A listed building there cannot be changed. Even the bedrooms are the same shape still, if I would like to see them. I tell her no, defer to another time. It seems too soon. Too soon to climb the narrow stairs, to open the curved door that aches with age, to stand, perhaps in your very room, under the same low ceiling, facing the window with its nine small panes, to see reflected in the mirror as you did, the made-up bed, closed, tight as an oyster that refuses to surrender up to prayer. Two more in this series about this bishop's journal. The next one was published quite recently in the Student Sci magazine, which is a terrific literary magazine that Jeffrey Reeves and gives tremendous support to new and emerging writers. And they first published him back in 2007 as one of their feature poems. So more recently, he invited me to give him a poem for a collection. For a special edition, especially New York edition, which they launched in New York as part of the Imagine Islands Festival. And I gave him one of the Elizabeth Bishop poems, which describes a visit that we know she made to Dublin Zoo. Though in this poem, I speculate that she may have visited the Bone Museum within the zoo. So this is called At the Bone House, and the collection takes. At the Bone House. These places are reminders, exposing how, after such acts, we share the scent of animals, eating, sex, and death. Our language tells us we are similar, brave as, mean as, or how we are wine, reason, we have our heads in the sand. Like forced comparisons, emotions paced in cages for display. Here in this one room, it is different. There are creatures here whose scent we never smell, the color of whose eyes we never see, never hear their whimper or their roar. I think nothing could be better than to be a skull in the grass cake, picked and pickled clean. All that gleaming whiteness, the clear edges of things emerging from the mess that was before. The open eye sockets, polished nasal bones, the silent yawn of the jaw, all appearing plain and unreadable as words on a page. Your skulls may keep their secrets, even in the last grave. So this last one, I owe some thanks to Seamus Lee. I knew that he would have met with the bishop going to be able to stay with them. When they took over for position in college there, and I wondered if they had discussed her journey to Ireland. In fact, they had just slightly, but they never sadly got to have a fuller conversation because she died quite unexpectedly before they had the more detailed conversation, but surely more about Ireland and the trip to Ireland would have come up. But one of the things he did recall is that she visited Elizabeth Bowen at Bowen Court. So this is a poem in which I imagine Seamus Heaney and Elizabeth Bishop engaging about Bowen Court. We thought we had all the time, we always do, there at the dinner table, over wine, or in the lounge later, at the ladies in Prefox Lockdown. I heard you saying things you may not, after all, have said. Yes, I'm in there too. Now, memory is like a cat with a ball of string unraveling. I kept no notes. I was living the start of a life, not recording it. There would be other days, until the star burst in the constellation of your brain. The name of the place you visited blows in on the air one day in response to a letter. These words inside me, no one else has shared, tucked for so long like a bookmark, now slipping loose. So I always know we kept such secrets in the small parts of our hearts. But I'm tired. Now someone else will see you, travelling up the drive. Someone else must write you, waking from sleep after a long journey, once forgotten, now reprised. Must take off your traveling coat and open your eyes. As Paul was saying, you know, I've worked an anthology, I think somebody has got free copies of. I did my master's in creative writing in the city in 2008, and we produced an anthology at the end of the year. So I'll just read one of the poems from that anthology. I know Michael Longley has said famously, you know, he wished he knew where poems came from, because he'd go there all the time. I've never been to this place called the Ice Hotel. I had a notion to write a poem about it, and then afterwards I thought it was James Bond movie. I seem to have got it right miraculously. So this poem is called Things You Learned in the Ice Hotel. Of course, it's not like all poems, it's not really about the Ice Hotel, it's really about the relationship that's going on, or isn't going on in the Ice Hotel. Things you learned in the Ice Hotel. Everything in the Ice Hotel is made from ice. The bar, the stool you sit on, the vodka and the glass melting together as you drink them both until your hands are empty, wet and cold. The bed you sleep on is frozen too, like a glass bed in a story, covered in furs. You lie buried in it, Snow White in her coffin, waiting for the prince. When he comes to bed, he tells you of the snow safari, what you missed. Though what most delights him is that each year they let the hotel melt, it's cut a new one from the ice. So, I don't know if you heard last year that the John Murray Show had a competition, a national poetry competition, conducted with his soul, and I mentioned it by accident. I have to thank for this one my mother-in-law, Facebook, and a few glasses of wine. My mother-in-law and my sister were visiting at Easter, and it was unusually nice weather, and we had them in the garden and deck chairs last year, and we were having a few glasses of wine. checked the computer and friends have put something up on Facebook asking, is it true that there are houses roaming all over Ireland searching for their owners? And of course, this is the effect of the wine, because as you said, there are horses roaming all over Ireland. So I thought, this is too good to waste. I think I wrote a poem about this, which, again, after another glass of wine, I did. I sent it off to John Murray, and highly commended in competition. So thanks to my mother-in-law. So this poem is called Moving Houses, A New Shift in the Property Market. Houses are moving all over Ireland. Tired of waiting for their owners to move in, they roam in search of them. Tearing their foundations from the dirt, dragging unpainted walls, raw skirting boards, they wander down the rough, unfinished roads. Houses are moving all over Ireland, searching the vacant pavements for an occupant, for someone to decorate, to inhabit them. Their barren windows stare with single gaze. Their empty hearts are cold. Even the rats have deserted them in shame. Houses are moving all over Ireland. The spines of stairways crumble with strain. Grey roof tiles fall like shattered chandeliers. Each day we hear the sound of glass dreams breaking. Each night we sit up late and count the cost. Hungry ghosts and hunted for our ghosts. So I'll just read one more, and before I do, I just want to thank you for being really fantastic audience. It was terrific to be here. I really enjoyed it, and I hope I'll be back again. And thanks to my family for supporting me as always, even though I'm perfect. They've heard all these so many times before, they're very good. So this is I always kind of really try to read at least one brand new poem just to test the water, as it's not been too safe. So this is a brand new poem I've written for the new year, and it's called The Lane. The old year marches out across the earth, shoulders bent under a heavy overcoat. Frost lines the lanes and the hedges freeze. He turns his head and nods to the newborn year who passes him halfway. Hostages exchanged for our fortunes, suddenly brighter, though fading fast as footsteps. We watch the new year aging now with each approach, and the old year growing lighter with each step away, until rising above the horizon like a dream, flying that we all have, was the same dream before dying, the same soft dream.